speaking to you from Old Bailey Courthouse in the heart of the city of London. Here on this late afternoon of September 5th, 1670, the legal battle that has aroused all England nears its final, its climactic hour. The jury is about to return for the third time in the case of the Crown versus William Penn, the well-known Quaker leader. That jury has been out for the past 6 hours, locked up by order of the court, without food, without drink. We still don't know if they'll stand fast, stick to their guns, defy the pressure and the prestige of this court, and once again, as they've done twice before, bring in a verdict that absolves young Penn of any criminal guilt. If the jury remains firm, unyielding, then here in Old Bailey, the Crown will suffer a stunning defeat. If the jury gives in, changes their verdict, then, as everyone knows, not only will the government of King Charles II achieve a considerable triumph, but the entire principle of trial by a free and independent jury may go into the discard for centuries to come. Word has come from the jury room that their deliberations are over. They're ready once again to deliver a verdict. We're waiting now for the court to reassemble. The crowds here are all in their seats. The soldiers...
September 5th, 1670, Old Bailey, London. The trial of William Penn. You are there.
CBS takes you back 280 years to the trial of William Penn, 12 years before he founded Pennsylvania. The charge? Speaking to an unlawful assembly of people and inciting them to riot. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. With all the modern facilities of radio present and CBS newsmen reporting from the scene,
you are there.
You are there is based on historical fact and quotation.
1670, Old Bailey Courthouse, London, and Bill Leonard.
Since this trial began 5 days ago, we here in Old Bailey have been witnessing a legal battle that's unique in the history of English law. It began as a simple, commonplace action no different from the hundreds of cases throughout England in the government's campaign to wipe out all dissension from the established Church of England. But all this has changed in the 3 days since this trial began, and no longer is Penn himself the focus of attention. It is the jury now. We're waiting for them to appear in this courtroom. Those 12 plain, hitherto unknown citizens of London. Twice they've returned to this courtroom with a verdict that finds Penn guilty only of speaking in Grace Church Street 2 weeks ago, August 14th, 1670. Twice the court has refused to accept this verdict because the verdict is not to the indictment. The question is not whether Penn spoke in Grace Church Street. This in itself is no crime. But whether he was criminally liable because he addressed an unlawful assembly and was disturbing the peace. Sir Samuel has sent them back to amend their verdict. They have refused. They've been stormed at by the court. They've been threatened. But still, up to now, in any event, the jury has remained firm, steadfast. They've refused to alter their verdict one word. That's the situation now, now at this moment, this tense, expected moment. The court is reassembling. It's reassembling. The 10 justices are entering the chamber. Sir Samuel Starling in the lead. Tall, austere-looking man. William Penn is being brought into the chamber now by the jailer. And, yes, here comes the jury. They're filing in, taking their places on the two rude planks that serve as benches. We're about to get underway.
Come to order. All those having business before this court, draw near, give your attention, and you shall be heard.
Sir, be seated. Starling is whispering something to the recorder, to John Howell. Sir John Howell, both look toward the jury box. Cold, hard looks. They're ready.
Gentlemen of the jury, are you agreed upon a verdict?
We are, my lord.
That was Thomas Vere, the foreman of the jury.
The prisoner arrived. Face the jury.
Young William Penn, he's only 26, you know. Evidently taking this ordeal quite well. He's tall, well-built, well-dressed, complexion very ruddy.
Gentlemen,
even now after
of the
weeks
jury, look upon the prisoner at the bar. Is William Penn guilty of the matters whereof he stands indicted, or not guilty?
My lord, We find William Penn guilty of speaking in Gracechurch Street.
Once again, for the third time, the jury has come in with that same inconclusive verdict. The court refused to accept. Back to the bench.
Gentlemen, quiet to the court. Gentlemen of the jury, is that all the verdict you have to give?
That is all the verdict I am commissioned to give.
Now, Sir Samuel is leaning over. Talk to one of the other judges, Sir John Howell, the recorder. Sir John is shifting some papers on his desk. The crowd's getting very quiet now. Sir John's about to speak.
Mr. Deere, you're the foreman of the jury. Did the jury not consider it an unlawful assembly? Was it not that William Penn was speaking to a tumult of people?
My commission does not go beyond the verdict I have given.
It is no verdict!
Your Honor!
William Penn is speaking.
Your Honor, the agreement of 12 men is a verdict in law. And such a one being given by the jury, I ask that the clerk record it.
My Lord, you must take a course with this fellow.
If Your Honor pleases, if this jury is forced to bring in another verdict...
Jailer!
Another verdict. Contrary to this, I say...
Jailer!
That they will be perjuring...
Drop his mouth! Make him keep his peace!
Gentlemen of the jury.
Sir Samuel Starling.
I have charged you three times before. This will be the fourth time. I hardly think it necessary to remind you that it will also be the last time. Remember, gentlemen, according to the indictment, William Penn, with divers other people, to the number of 300, did assemble and congregate in the street called Gracechurch Street, unlawfully and tumultuously, and in contempt of His Majesty the King, his crown and dignity. Now, to prove this charge, the crown has introduced a number of most credible and trustworthy witnesses. Unless you be blind and deaf, which I take it you are not, the facts must be known to you. Yet three times you have brought me in a verdict that is no verdict at all. It is no verdict to say that William Penn is guilty of speaking in Gracechurch Street. You must say that he is guilty of speaking in Gracechurch Street to an unlawful assembly. Do you understand that? To an unlawful assembly. I warn you, sirs. No, better, I bite you. All you gentlemen of the jury, not to play upon the patience of this court. Go out now and return to me a decent verdict. Bring me the verdict I ask, or by my oath, you shall starve, you shall rot in prison. You shall be carted around the city as was done in ancient times. Bring me my verdict. Now get out. This court is recessed.
Jurymen into the jury room. Jurymen are protesting, but they're just being shoved, pushed in. They're being shoved through the door. There's no way to tell just when the jury will return with its fourth and doubtless its final verdict. We're prepared to stay with the trial, of course, right to the end. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a few blocks from here at the Inns of Court, Quincy Howe has been speaking with some of England's top lawyers, top jurists, on the legal aspects of the trial. He has a report for us now, so we take you to the Inns of Court and Quincy Howe.
This is Quincy Howe, reporting from this traditional center of legal training and practice, where many of England's foremost barristers and jurists show deep concern over the events now taking place at Old Bailey. Sir Hartley Pomeroy, for instance, says that an intimidated jury is no longer a jury in the tradition of Magna Carta. It is nothing but a tool of tyranny. Lord Glastonbury, on the other hand, believes that the court has stayed well within its rights and that Sir Samuel Starling's position is well taken. In times of emergency, according to Lord Glastonbury, certain legal niceties may be suspended. One episode in particular has come in for considerable discussion here at Inns of Court. The now famous hat incident. Some legal experts assert that that bit of business immediately established a prejudice of the court against the defendant, against William Penn. It happened, as you may remember, on the first day of the trial. When Penn was brought into the courtroom, one of the attendants, knowing that Quakers never remove their hats as an acknowledgement of authority, snatched Penn's hat from his head and pushed him toward the bench. Now here, by tape recording, is what occurred then, and the first voice you hear will be that of Sir Samuel Starling.
Sheriff.
Your Honor.
Who bid you pull off this gentleman's hat? Put it on again.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Penn, do you know this is the King's Court?
I know it to be a court. I suppose it to be the King's Court.
Do you know there is respect due the court?
Yes.
Why do you not pay it, then?
I do pay it.
Why do you not pull off your hat, then?
Because I do not believe that to be any sign of respect.
Oh. Well, the court so deems it to be. The court sets 40 marks upon your head as a fine for contempt of court.
I desire it might be observed that when I came into the court, my hat was taken off. And it has been put on since, by order of the bench, not by my own action. Therefore, not I, but the bench should be fined.
So that's why, in the view of some legal experts, the court has assumed from the very start a hostile, even they say, a biased attitude toward William Penn. Still more serious, according to these experts, is the fact that the court has adopted these same hostile tactics toward the jury. They take the position, these experts do, that the pressure, the coercion, as they call it, of the jury by the bench is something new, something novel. Such things as locking the jury up without food or drink, using threatening language. As some experts see it, all this adds up to a dangerous threat to the whole structure of English law. They feel, therefore, that what's on trial at Old Bailey is not just one man or even one minority religious creed. They say that what is at stake is the very cornerstone of traditional English justice, trial by a free, unfettered, independent jury. It's for this reason that here at Inns of Court, and indeed throughout England, all eyes are on the 12 men who are at this moment deliberating in the Old Bailey jury room. In the courtyard outside the Old Bailey is Don Hollenbeck, who has with him William Penn's fiancée, Miss Guglielma Springett, and the well-known Quaker leader, Mr. Thomas Elwood, formerly secretary to the poet John Milton. So we now go to the courtyard outside Old Bailey and Don Hollenbeck.
Miss Springett, what do you think? Will the jurymen give way to the demands of the court? Will they find your fiancé, William Penn, guilty of speaking before an unlawful assembly, inciting people to riot?
I hope they'll have the courage to uphold their verdict. I'm praying they will.
Thanks,
Mr.
Elwood.
Dan Williams is I.
Mr. Elwood, please. Mr. Elwood, may we ask your opinion, sir?
If they're worth the name of Englishmen, they'll act like Englishmen and not be horsewhipped into doing what they don't believe in doing.
Horsewhipped? Here now, listen to who's talking about horsewhipping.
I'm sorry, madam, if you please. If you don't mind, I'll be glad to speak with you in a moment, but not now.
I can tell you about these Quakers.
I'm sorry, Miss Springett.
We understand such interruption. It's nothing new to us.
These aren't very easy times for Quakers, are they?
You must know, friend, that 15,000 of our innocent have been imprisoned in 20 years. 450 have perished in jail.
Yes, I understand, Mr. Elwood, that some of your persuasion are thinking of emigrating to the New World, to America.
And good riddance!
That is true. Some are already there. Others plan to go.
William has spoken of going to America many times.
I understand you both were present at Grace Church Street when William Penn was arrested.
He should have been.
Yes, we went to the meeting house together. Came openly to our meeting house. When we arrived, we found troops stationed at the door, refusing us entry.
What a foolish thing to do.
Foolish thing indeed.
We who call ourselves friends need no set room to find our love of God, nor any particular person to show us his way. So when the soldiers barred the way to the meeting house, we held our meeting in the open street. William Penn was moved by the spirit to stand up and address us. His words attracted many who listened with good behavior until the troops came and hauled Penn off to prison. There was no riot or incitement. Why should there ever be when a friend speaks?
Listen to him, he'll lie.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Mr. Elwood, and you, Miss Springett.
Thank you.
It's the jury. It's what the jury does. All English freedom depends on what the jury does.
Yes, and thank you very much. And now, madam, we'll be very glad to talk with you.
Angry? The polite one, though. I'm honored, I'm sure.
May we have your name?
The name is Blodgett. Margaret Blodgett.
Mrs. Blodgett?
Miss Blodgett.
Ah, yes, Miss Blodgett. I guess you don't approve of the Quaker persuasion.
It's a feeble lot of liars, they are. Like that one you had here, the skinny one.
You mean Mr. Thomas Elwood?
If that be his name, that be him.
You think he wasn't telling the truth?
About the meeting I'm talking about. Him saying it was so peaceful. Yes. With just nothing but prayers and sermons. It wasn't nothing like that, I can tell you.
Oh, you know about the meeting, didn't
that
you?
I do. A disgraceful tumult it was. People rioting and shouting and breaking up the peace. Just like Sir Samuel said it was.
You know that for a fact?
Bodies heaped on the street, blood flowing.
Yes, you saw all this
yourself. It was. Enough to make peaceful folk shudder and tremble.
You were there yourself, Miss Blodgett. Did you see all this yourself?
Well, not exactly. It was a friend of my cousin's who was there, but she told my cousin exactly what happened, and she's a truthful soul, she is.
Yes, but you personally weren't present. You didn't see any rioting yourself.
There were soldiers there, weren't there, when they told you there's got to be rioting. It's troublemakers, a lot of them are. Just troublemakers. If you ask me, I'll tell you what to do with them. Hang them. Hang the lot of them. And if that jury don't do what the judges tell them to do, then, says I, hang the jury. Hang them all!
Thank you, Miss Blodgett, thank you. I've just been informed now that Ned Calmer has been able to arrange an interview with Lord Arlington, the King's Minister of State. So we take you now to the Palace of Whitehall and Ned Calmer.
Just a few seconds ago, Lord Arlington, the Secretary of State, one of the most influential members of His Majesty's Cabinet, passed by on his way to the Royal Chambers, and I asked him to spare us a minute or two. He has kindly consented. As you know, sir, the jury is still out in the case of the Crown versus William Penn. Do you think they're going to change their position and bring in a verdict that will find Penn guilty of addressing an unlawful and tumultuous assembly?
Yes, I would say that the chances are that they will see the light. Yes, I think the chances are quite good. Sir Samuel has, shall we say, enlightened them to a considerable degree.
Then you feel his actions in this trial are justified?
Justified? Oh, demanded is the word. These are our trying times. The land is in a ferment.
You think then, sir,
21 years ago, we saw the most heinous of crimes committed in this country. The killing of a king, His Majesty Charles I, by the illegal rump Parliament. For 10 years thereafter, we suffered under the rule of Cromwell. Until justice prevailed and King Charles II was restored to his legal heritage in 1660.
It's your impression then, Lord Arlington, that the Quakers have been responsible for all this unrest you speak of?
No, not that precisely. Not all of it. But the thesis of the revolt against King Charles I was a similar form of religious dissension. A peaceful nation requires the establishment of authority, a single authority to keep it peaceful. One law, one king, one church.
And in view of all this, Lord Arlington, you believe, therefore, that the legal protection of trial by an independent jury should not be extended to the Quakers?
Oh, my dear man, what are the little liberties of little people as against the interests of the state?
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. Trial by jury, by any kind of jury, is a luxury we can afford only in normal times. I tell you this. I will gladly let 1,000 innocent men rot in the Tower if among them there is one that plots treason. Now, if you will excuse me, I must not keep His Majesty waiting.
Of course. Thank you, Lord Arlington. This is Ned Calmer returning you now to Bill Leonard at Old Bailey Courthouse.
The jury is ready to return with its verdict. Court is reassembling. Word has come that agreement has been reached in the jury room that the verdict, the fourth verdict that Sir Samuel Starling has emphasized must be the last and binding verdict, has been reached.
All rise.
The 10 presiding justices are entering the court chamber, taking their place at their desks, which are set in a semicircle on a slightly raised dais. See Sir Samuel Starling coming in first, taking the center desk. That's the one, of course, reserved for the presiding justice. A gilded canopy surmounted by the royal arms hangs above him. On the wall behind him, the sword of justice. All the 10 judges are at their desks now.
John Howell, the recorder. Sir John Robinson, the Lord Lieutenant of London Tower. Four aldermen, three sheriffs. They're at their places now. Over to the bench.
Lawyers, 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 come to order. All those having business before this court, draw near, give your attention, and you shall be heard. Be seated.
Bring the prisoner, William Penn, to the bar.
William Penn is being brought in. Court attendants taking him down a flight of stairs leading from the rear of the chamber into the well of the courtroom here. Now the jury's coming in. 12 very tired, very harassed, mighty worried gentlemen. See their foreman, Thomas Veer, wiping his large bald head with a huge kerchief. He's perspiring and evidently under a tremendous strain. The jury's taking their seats now.
Gentlemen of the jury.
Sir Sandals, darling.
Are you agreed upon a verdict?
We are, my lord.
What say you? Look upon the prisoner at the bar. Is William Penn guilty of the matters whereof he stands indicted, or not guilty?
Here is our verdict, written and attested upon this sheet of paper.
Evidently, the jury wants its verdict on paper.
Give the paper.
Legally attested. Thomas Veer is handing the verdict to the clerk now. Veer seems very nervous. He's biting his lower lip.
The clerk will deliver the verdict to the bench.
Clerk's taking the paper to Sir Samuel Starling. He has it now. Still folded. He hasn't read it. He's just staring at the jury. No expression on his face. Now, very, very slowly, he looks down at the paper. He unfolds it. He's read the verdict. He's giving no sign. Just hands the paper to John Howell, the recorder, sitting at the desk next to him. Howell's looking at it. He hands it to the next justice. The verdict's making the rounds, being handed from desk to desk. But nothing's being said. No announcement's being made. Very unusual. Everyone here's at the edge of their seats. The foreman of the jury, Thomas Veer, is still standing. Nervous, of course he is, but he's standing erect. In the jury box, they're sitting like statues, looking toward the bench, toward Sir Samuel and John Howell and the other eight justices. And now Sir Samuel once again stares at the paper with the verdict. Now he's putting it down. I think he's going to talk you over to the bench.
Gentlemen of the jury, beyond this verdict, there can be no other. The bench is desirous of learning in open court whether this verdict was openly and honestly arrived at. And so each of you on the jury will now, in public, reaffirm the decision attested on this paper and arrived at secretly in the jury room. You may still change your mind. If so, it is my desire to give you the opportunity to speak your true mind and render your true verdict. I will ask each of you to answer individually, to call out personally your verdict, so that there may be no mistaking, so that we may see and hear each of you give down your decision. Do you understand? Clerk? Poll the jury.
Yes, Your Honor. Thomas Veer.
Not guilty.
No, he's not.
Not guilty. Not guilty. Thomas Veer, foreman of the jury, votes not guilty. This clearly means that is the verdict written on the paper. And nothing ambiguous about this verdict as there was with the previous ones. The jury's no longer saying that Penn is guilty of speaking in Gracechurch Street, a thing which in itself is no crime, something for which he couldn't be punished and not be imprisoned. This time they've come out with a verdict that is to the indictment. They find Penn not guilty. The question is, will they stand firm? Can all of them stand firm? One of them, just one, gives way. If one of these jurors should call guilty as he's being polled, this verdict will be thrown out of court, upset,
quite possibly a mistrial will be called, and Penn once again will be imprisoned to wait upon another trial. It's up to those jurors now, to each of them individually. Will they stand? Will they stand firm? Or will they give way? The crowd has quieted. The jury is continuing to be polled now by the clerk.
Edward Bushell.
Not guilty.
John Hammond.
I...
Not guilty. Henry Henley.
Not guilty.
The first four jurors have stood
Henry
their
ground. Michel.
Not guilty.
John Brightman.
Not guilty.
Charles Milson.
Not guilty.
No one, not one has switched yet.
Gregory,
not one of them.
Wolklet.
Still have five to go.
Not guilty.
No, there are only
John
four.
Bailey.
Not guilty.
Three.
William Lever.
Not guilty.
Just two more now. Two more jurors.
James Damask.
Not guilty.
Well, this is it. This is it now. The last juror. The last one will be pulled.
William Plumstead.
He stands firm. If he stands firm, William Penn will be acquitted. If he switches. If he switches, Penn is doomed.
William Plumstead.
Not guilty.
You heard it. You heard it. Not guilty. The jury here has stood up against all the pressure, all the authority of the bench. They haven't wavered. They haven't wavered. They've stood firm. Penn is free. William Penn is acquitted. He's free. The verdict stands. Not guilty. The trial is over. Penn has rushed over to the jury box. He's shaking the hands of the jurors. Carling Howell.
September 5th. 1670. The jury, in the case of the Crown versus William Penn, refuses to bow before the pressure of the court. Penn is acquitted, and the concept of trial by a free and independent jury is reaffirmed. You are there.
You've been listening to The Trial of William Penn in the prize-winning series, You Are There. Today's program was written by Irv Tunick, directed by Mitchell Grayson, and produced by Sam Abelow. You Are There is a presentation of the CBS Documentary Unit under the supervision of Werner Michel. Philip Burniff was heard as William Penn, Barry Kroger as Sir Samuel Starling, Joan Smith as Guglielmo Springett. Others in the cast, Ian Martin, William Podmore, Adelaide Klein, Guy Sorrell, and Robin Craven. You Are There is brought to you every fourth Sunday. The next broadcast will be heard at the same time 4 weeks from today over most of the same CBS stations. Next month,
September 7, 1853, Broadway Tabernacle, New York City, the Women's Rights Convention. In the face of raucous opposition, the struggle for equal rights for women advances in America. You are there.
Next week at the same time, the Main Street Music Hall, starring Bill Tabbert of South Pacific with Alfredo Antonini and his orchestra, will return over most of these same CBS stations. CBS also invites you to join A. Burroughs, Lyman Bryson, and John K.M. McCaffrey every Sunday when they appear on a new kind of quiz show. We Take Your Word, a program that's based on the words and phrases we use every day. We Take Your Word is heard every Sunday night on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where you'll laugh at Jack Benny every Sunday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.